John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to the kitchen table today. It's so nice to have all of you with us. We know you have a tremendous amount of choices on a beautiful day like this, and to spend it with us makes us feel really special, as you know what I mean. Michelle, the kitchen table is absolutely filled with friends and food today, and it's going to be nice.
Oh, yeah.
It's a special day.
Things are heating up.
Things are getting there, so to speak. I want you to lock the kitchen door because people will be trying to get in.
This is like private testing in here.
No, this is all confidential stuff.
David will take care of that.
Oh, yeah, David will take care of that.
We've got hired security at the front door.
Lock the door, throw the keys in. Anyway, y'all, it's great to have you with us. And again, thank you so much for joining us. Today's a beautiful day, and I want to begin by introducing our executive producer, Michelle York. How you doing, Michelle?
I'm very well. Well, thank you for asking.
Good.
You?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good for a nickel cook, you know?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Good. Glad
how was your week?
It was a little testing.
Yeah, because your aid assistants were on vacation and you had to do the work yourself, huh?
Thanks be to God, Dan Ling just landed in New Orleans. I checked. She just got off the ship.
So she's back.
I'm back.
Sitting next to Michelle, y'all, our historian and archivist, Dr. Shirley Sands, how you doing?
I'm great,
thank
you.
Put your full title in today.
Thank you. Yeah, it took me a long time to get that.
Anyway, what's your day looking like, huh?
Well, I think that it's going to be getting hotter today in multiple ways.
And we're very excited about the big show today.
Oh,
and
of course,
across the glass wall, our engineers are keeping us alive and well on the satellite and making sure everybody driving down I-10 and 55 and 12 knows we here. The McLaughlin boys, how are y'all doing?
Excellent. Couldn't be any better.
I'm doing real good today, John.
Yep. You doing all right?
Yeah. We're sitting over here eating this pepper mash with a spoon. It's just great.
How do you think that would go on our experimental 40-day age of prime rib we've been trying desperately to get done here?
I think it would be pretty good.
In other words, you're speechless.
Yeah, that would do it, yeah.
Today we're going to be talking about, and we have a great guest we're going to introduce in just a little bit, but today we're going to be talking about something that is near and dear to our hearts. Certainly it's about the spice and flavor of Louisiana, and it's hard to think that we would be talking about Louisiana food on a program like this in a studio kitchen and have to explain flavor and spice and say that's what we're going to be talking about. That's all we ever talk about over here. But the reason it's on the top of my mind, Michelle, last week, as you know, I took a little trip to Dallas.
That's right.
And I went to see some of my friends over at one of our customers that's into nice, flavorful Latin food, Southwest cuisine. Kind of that culinary signature is about heat and spice and all those wonderful things. And in the process of our conversation, it was brought about that the peppers of the world, the things that really create the base of flavor for most of our hot sauces, barbecue sauces, glazes, rubs, all of these different things are the base of peppers that come from all over the world. But yet, in the American vernacular, we only think about things like chili relleno. So we only think about poblano. We only think about our own magical cayennes and Tabasco peppers that we don't even think of Tabasco as a pepper. We think of it as a liquid sauce. It's the sauce that's world famous because, of course, when I opened my restaurant in Beijing, when I opened my restaurant in Moscow, when I opened in the Andes, Tabasco was in a bottle on the table. Mm-hmm. When every child in Tiananmen Square was wearing the little Mao suits and that little red book, Tabasco was on the tables in China. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we know how famous the peppers that are so associated with Louisiana are, but yet there's a world of peppers out there that are now coming to the forefront because of the creative and innovative chefs and the new cuisines that are rolling out across the market, chefs trying to make their names, even consumers at home who are so into cooking because of Food Network and because of Bravo's Top Chef and just the magazines that are constantly touting flavors and peppers and all of that. So as I went to see this customer and started to talk about opportunities in peppers and just opportunities in flavors, peppers, of course, came right to the forefront of our conversation. So I thought with the popularity of the home cook, the popularity of television, that we should invite a very exciting guest onto the show. I thought we should bring somebody in who knew a lot about pepper. So we started to search the world, Michelle. Let's go to one of my great friends, Alejandro Stiernan in Colombia. He's right in the Andes, right in the heart of where so many peppers are grown. Let's call him up and let him to be on the show because I know he knows a lot about it. And we call around, couldn't get Alejandro on the phone. So I said, well, you know, let's go to this. Let's go to that. Let's go to India. Let's go. And then all of a sudden you came in and said, hey, you ever heard of this company in Baton Rouge? And all of a sudden you come up with this great company in Baton Rouge. An engineering company and builds all of this equipment and then eventually got into peppers. We're very excited about that today. And of course, peppers are all over the table. And y'all, just to give you a little bit of the history, we know that peppers are native to South and Central America. Over 25 species exist with five domesticated species and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cultivars. It's not surprising that there are peppers that are mild and sweet like the bells. There's the pimentos that are, and then of course there's the other extreme, Michelle, all of the peppers that are very, very, very hot, like the habaneros, even the jalapenos that are kind of in the middle, and then the ghost peppers, which we're going to talk a little bit about, that's supposedly the hottest in the world from India. There's evidence that we know, I think, Michelle, from some of our even early research on the Encyclopedia Cajun Creole Cuisine, that the peppers that we know were first planted, the first plants were domesticated in Central America. At least we think that.
Right.
You still with me on that?
Columbus hit pay dirt when he got to South America.
No, that's right. And with the Colombian exchange going back and forth from Europe and then back to South America and then back and forth and foods being traded back and forth, we know that peppers started to spread around the world. It seems that they were cultivated as far back as 5,000 to 7,000 B.C. throughout Mexico and certainly South America. They were eaten for flavors, but they were also religious, like corn was religious. There was a lot of religious factor, especially with the Mayans. They were used medicinally, for sure. They were used to cure everything from toothaches to coughs and intestinal problems and creating some intestinal problems. We know that Columbus actually wrote numerous entries in his journals about the peppers that he was finding in Haiti, Española, and Santo Domingo. And he called them by their Spanish name at the time, pimenta, I guess was the name of it, the Spanish word for black pepper. Why would he call them black pepper? They were all red and yellows and all different.
Yeah, but remember, he was thinking he was in India, too. He's playing this little game that he never admitted he didn't get all the way, you know, to the other side of the world.
Well,
He was a man.
He had false blood in him. He didn't admit when he was wrong. Once brought back to Spain, the peppers were quickly planted.
Right.
And within 60 years, peppers were being grown all over the country, all over the world. It was in the 16th century that the Portuguese took hot peppers with them around the world. So Portuguese are responsible for this hot mess we're in right now. We're trying to figure out what's our best peppers. How did the chilies get into Africa? The sources are sparse, but it's thought that the peppers came to West Africa via the Portuguese from Brazil and Cape Verde Islands. And, of course, peppers, as we know, coming over there as early as the 1520s. We know that chili peppers started to travel across Africa. Today, East Africa, of course. All the cooks that we talked to from Senegal and Gambia and that Senegambia region, they all pride themselves in having a lot of pepper in their cooking. And in fact, when you eat in a restaurant in East Africa and you ask for peppers, they're going to bring you the mash with a little bit olive oil in it to mix up and put, as we were talking about earlier, rather than any the vinegars and all that. It'll just be to crush peppers and olive oil. They call it their ketchup.
Sounds good.
Anyway, y'all, so Portuguese traders brought the peppers to India, and from India, chilies followed the same route as black pepper through the Himalayas to the interior China. My God, I'm tired just even thinking about it. You know, it's just how peppers actually
traveled.
Today, you think of Sichuan dishes in China, and you see the influence on the move, because most people do agree that the Sichuan and Chinese peppers just took that same travel that went around the world. And There was a lot of debate at one time about whether the Chinese had origin to some of the hot peppers that influenced the Hunan and Sichuan cuisines. And, of course, today we know they just got it like everybody else did. It's also believed that the Portuguese traders who most likely brought chilies to Southeast Asia as well, where today it's ground and chopped and added into all of these mixtures, that they were the ones responsible for moving so much of the peppers around the world. Regardless, y'all, today, 20% of the world's population use chili peppers in some form in their cuisine. 20%. That's more than rice eaters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, when you put it that way, yeah.
I mean, just think about that. And rice is the number one consumed. If you think about it, chili peppers can be eaten fresh. They can be eaten dried. They can be put into powders. They can be crushed. They can be mixed with oils and vinegars. They can be eaten as just simple mashed and ground. They can be put directly into anything. They can, of course, be smoked. What else it can be? Who knows? What they can be stuffed, whatever. Y'all, the show is going to be fun today because we do have a great guest who I'm falling in love with their products here. I think there's a business opportunity for me. Don't tell me to stop.
I see the wheels turning.
Don't tell me to stop. Well, once I I'm on my way.
Some good stuff happening right here.
We're going to be talking about. So today we're talking about these amazing little vegetables that are eaten all over the world. We're talking about peppers. We're talking about chilies. And, y'all, we're talking about some really fun flavors added to foods that, as you say, 20% of the world uses. So, y'all, we don't want you to go anywhere. We're going to be back in just a minute. We're going to heat things up in here.
I live up by the Canadian border. I don't speak that Spanish so good. But when I get down to Mama's Cantina, I sure love that Mexican food. Enchiladas, tortillas, frijoles, refritos, I sure love that Mexican food. Is not down in the desert, it's high on a mountain so cool. But when I get done with my nachos y chili, I'm sure I will drink like a fool. Margaritas, tequilas, cerveza, sangria, I sure love that Mexican food. Hot sauce and eating hot chilies, I sure love that Mexican food. Quesadillas, burritos, chalupas, tamales, I sure love that Mexican food.
Hi, I'm Pete Bergeron. If your day starts early, like mine does, let's spend it together with Cajun music. From 5 to 7 a.m. here at Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Get that little extra bounce with dynamite in every ounce. But it's knowing where to stop that counts when you've got Tabasco. Olé! I said give it away. Olé! The psychiatrists say if you feel old, you're good as gold with a little Tabasco. You are cold, it's all controlled with a little Tabasco. So if you find you're letting the grass grow, you can take it from me, it's the way you should live. It's a sure guarantee to get back what you give. A little Tabasco. A little Tabasco in your life.
Tabasco. All right. Welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. And we're so happy to have you with us in the studio today as we talk about those amazing little vegetables we were talking about. Mm-hmm. We call them foods that enhance Indian cooking, ingredients that enhance Mexican and Southwest. Some people may call it Tex-Mex flavors, you name it. Today we're talking about peppers.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about chilies. And we're talking about chipotles and red habaneros and green jalapenos and red serranos and
Pepper mash.
That's what we're talking about today. Michelle, we have a great guest on the show with us today. Why don't you go ahead and introduce him?
We do. We have Chris White with us of the Louisiana Pepper Exchange. And like we were saying earlier, we searched the world over to find Chris right there in Baton Rouge.
That's right.
Louisiana Pepper Exchange, they specialize in providing pepper mash in small volumes. They provide these to small and medium-sized kitchens, co-packers, sauce makers. They do this locally and nationwide. They are importers as well. Chris, it's so great to have you with us here on Stirring It Up today.
Chris, thank you so much. So you actually drove in from New Orleans today.
Yep, we were down in New Orleans this weekend.
Okay, good. Now, where do we begin?
I'd like to begin just knowing a little more about Chris personally. Pre-pepper.
Pre-pepper, okay. Chris, pre-pepper history of Chris White.
Wow, where do I start?
Well,
I was born in Baton Rouge. Lived in Baton Rouge, grew up in Baton Rouge. Moved off the way to, went to go to school New York, went to the military academy, mm-hmm. served in the army, came back, started working my father's business where we sell equipment to the chemical industry. Mm-hmm. Had a real unique opportunity to use our equipment in a major hot sauce producer in South Louisiana, mm-hmm. and we've done a lot of business with them. And as an engineer, I've been a bit of a resource for them. So they asked me to help them with a project to move a lot of their peppers in bulk from South and Central America. So we invented and patented a large tank that holds 55,000 pounds of pepper mash.
Goodness.
The pepper mash is filled in this tank, comes to Louisiana and other places now, and is unloaded.
So it was the engineering side that got you into the pepper business to
yes,
begin
sir.
With. For those of you who have been to West Point, to drive onto the grounds of West Point mm-hmm. is absolutely stunning. Well, what is it like to walk onto West Point that first day?
Intimidating.
Realizing the history that's been there. And tell us a little bit about that. That's got to be unbelievable.
Yeah, West Point is such a very unique place and such a dear place in my heart. Those 4 years at West Point are probably the hardest 4 years of my life, challenging physically and emotionally and psychologically. But it's a place steeped with so much history that is what keeps you motivated to continue on a daily basis, knowing that you're walking across a parade ground that Stonewall Jackson walked across, or General mm-hmm. Lee, or Eisenhower, or so. It's a tremendous place to go to school, tremendous experience. I'd do it 1,000 times. I'd mm-hmm. send every one of my 4 boys there if they would go. It's a place I highly recommend every American go, spend a couple of days.
Were you always thinking about you wanted to go to West Point? Was it in your family, or what was the drive for West Point?
Yeah, we don't have much of a family tradition in the military in our family. It's just something I decided as a freshman in high school I wanted to do, so kind of set my sights on it, and was able to get in, and it's a great experience.
Now, one last question about West Point. You hear all the stories about the first year there, the first week there, just how tough it is to acclimate to the daily activities. At what point in that 4 years did you get to a place where you say, I've made it, and now, it's kind of...
When you graduate and walk out the door.
Graduation day is the day. The first year is, it's very beast. Difficult. The first mm-hmm. summer is extremely difficult. It's a process called Beast Barrack, the basic training for the cadets. That's a very difficult process. And then once the school year starts, you're still basically treated harshly as a plebe, so through your whole year, and then what ends up happening is the school year starts you adding all the academics,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
So as you progress through your 4 years there, it becomes a little bit easier in certain aspects, but in other aspects it becomes much harder because you have all your academics and all your military responsibilities all crammed in, and they just, to force you to be able to learn how to prioritize, they overload mm-hmm. you into a day that, you can't get all the stuff done you need to get done, and they, that's by plan. So you're forced to prioritize what you can get done. done and what's important. Very strict. You know, there's some, you can't get up before 5:20 in the morning, but you have to be in bed by 11:30. So you're taking 24 hours engineering courses on top of all your military responsibilities and physical training. Right. And so pretty rigorous.
It must be a great, great preparation for your business life and the way you organize yourself as a business leader.
Absolutely. It teaches you a lot of things about life in general. And it is definitely a good training ground for running your business.
You have an engineering degree.
Yes, sir.
Tell us a little bit about your business prior to Peppers in Engineering.
We have a business where we design and sell engineer process equipment to the chemical plants, refineries, paper mills, and also the food plants in the areas. That business was started in 81 by my father and it's grown tremendously over the past 30 years and going through another growth spurt right now, and it's a very, very busy time.
Sure.
But those things that we do can be applied to the food industry and to hot sauce makers, because dealing with things like pepper mash is a difficult thing. It's a very unique fluid that doesn't follow the normal hydraulics of most liquids. So it's now that background was very critical in me understanding how to be able to mix this stuff and pump the stuff.
Now, did you come from a food family? Was cooking a part of your life, or this is totally new for you?
It's a bit new. I'm a big barbecuer. I'm not the cook in the family. Never really have been. I like to eat. So this is a bit new for me. As we got into this, I've learned a tremendous amount about it. So it's been a learning experience. And
so you're building these stainless steel containers. Then you get a call from one of the big pepper companies that say, we need a vehicle to be able to get this ground mash from wherever, South America, here for us to do whatever with. And that's a challenge that's given to y'all. And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was a very lengthy process. We started trying to do this in this big flexi tank, we call it. And because the pepper separates during transit, it has to be agitated or mixed before you can unload it. And we're talking 55,000 pounds of pepper in one big bag. It's 6,000 gallons of pepper mash. So you had to go through a very interesting process where we had to determine how we could most effectively mix the peppers inside this flexi tank. And a lot of trial and error, a lot of being covered in pepper mash from head to toe, which is not a fun experience. But after, 3 or 4 years and several different trials, we finally refined the product. And it was really something I was doing to help my customer, not really in any intention of starting a business. And once we got it to work and it became successful, we started shipping very large volumes of pepper mash inside those tanks.
And at some point in time, you said, wow, we're doing tanks and we're doing agitation, but look what's inside of it.
That's right.
Look at this stuff that smells so good and it's all over me and it burns a little bit. What was that step between just shipping pepper mash to saying, we could do something with this ourselves? That had to be a moment.
That was a moment, and it was a pretty clear moment, because as the word started getting out in the hot sauce and pepper industry that we had large volumes of pepper mash being moved in our containers, we started getting calls from a lot of smaller specialty gourmet types of hot sauce companies, and they would call and say, hey, we need pepper mash, and we need it in bulk. We're growing very fast. And I said, well, sure, I can send you a range to have 52,000 pounds sent to you. And they would be like, what do you mean? Wait. We're talking different levels of bulk here. They would explain, well, we usually go to the grocery store and we get 40 pounds of habanero peppers and we grind them and we make our hot sauce with it. So what we really need is a 5-gallon pail, which would be 40 pounds. So the light turned on in my head. Hey, we've got access to incredible product with incredible suppliers in South and Central America. We have very efficient means of transporting it here. So we opened Louisiana Pepper Exchange, where we actually bring this pepper in bulk and we store it and break bulk it to smaller.
What people need.
That's right.
Right.
So what kind of peppers do you deal with? There's so many to choose from.
It's always evolving. It's based off of what people need. The basic peppers that are the most popular that we always keep in inventory are cayenne, habaneros, both green and red, and also orange. Mm-hmm. We do jalapenos, do some serrano. We also do some specialty peppers that are becoming really popular in the smaller gourmet hot sauce world, like chipotle purees, which is really a smoked jalapeno. We also do ghost peppers, and basically it changes. When we have a customer that calls us and says, hey, can you get us this type of pepper, we go out to our suppliers and we source it, or we encourage them to grow it.
So you also are in the business now of getting farmers to grow peppers in regions for you as well, right?
Absolutely. We have growers in many different regions around the world. We import peppers from Colombia, Peru, Ecuador, Panama, Nicaragua. So we have lots of different regions, and some of these peppers perform better in different climates. That we're very fortunate that we can source these peppers wherever
there's best. A need.
That's right.
Sure. We've been talking about pepper mash.
Yes.
For the person who's sitting out there saying, what's pepper mash? I mean, it's a basic ingredient, and yet it's not something that most of us think about. What is pepper mash?
That's a very good point. And sometimes, as much as we move around, I just assume people understand what that is. But pepper mash is just a fresh pepper that is put usually through a hammer mill. Salt is added to it, and what it does is it creates a mash, which is shelf-stable at ambient temperatures and room temperatures. Because peppers have a relatively short shelf life as a fresh pepper, it's a way to be able to handle large volumes of pepper mash or peppers and keep them stable. So most of the hot sauce producers use their peppers in this form as their basis for their base ingredient to make their hot sauce.
And the salt becomes actually the preservative in the pepper, not the flavor, although it does add flavor toward the end.
Correct. But it does add flavor, but it is the preservative. Right.
Is your client giving you the formula for you to create that mash, or y'all delving into the food science of it?
You know, really all there is pepper and salt. It's a very basic ingredient. So that formula, or the percentage of pepper salt that is in the pepper mash, is generally driven by the customer specifications.
Right. Are you seeing, because of the new interest in peppers, certainly the wide, wide range of knowledge being brought about through television about all of the ethnic cuisines around the world? Are you seeing more folks enjoying the hotter side of peppers? What are you seeing in the growth of hot peppers?
The growth of hot peppers is phenomenal. And, you know, if you ever do a search on the internet and just search hot sauce, you're going to find 5,000 different hot sauce manufacturers. And each of these hot sauce manufacturers are trying to create a special market, and they're usually using a hot pepper to do it. And there's a large following of, we call them chili heads, around the country and world, who are interested in, you know, any kind of new innovative product that has, you know, a really hot pepper. So it's become very, very popular. It's growing very rapidly, and it's just phenomenal how fast, you know, we see that changing and the demand for these different types of hot peppers.
The general consensus between whether it's historians, cooks, or a combination of, normally think of all of the hot, spicy peppers coming from the Rio Grande South, and the sweeter peppers, the milder peppers from the Rio Grande North. What are you finding with the sweetness and the hotness of peppers in that locale?
It is driven by the location, because the climate and the soil can have a large effect on the taste of the peppers. So, you know, for example, you know, we were looking at this red habanero that we have here that's extremely hot, okay, and it's grown in a part of Peru that is very arid. It's dry. It hasn't rained in hundreds of years in that portion of the country.
Gosh.
So it's a lot of sunlight, okay, very arid condition. So that does affect the heat of the pepper.
You're an engineer. You're getting into very, very interesting area of food. What are you learning? What's exciting you about this pepper movement?
What excites me about the pepper movement is the passion of the industry. It's, you know, it's something that people love, are very excited about, passionate about, which is, to me, very unique. It's when passion and excitement that people have, and the way they follow the different types of peppers and the passion they have for the tastes and cooking with it, it's really unique to me, and it really excites me.
So the guys out there who are making these sauces, what peppers are the most popular for them?
Mostly in the smaller hot sauce manufacturers, that portion of the business, you know, hot is what's important to a lot of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Although there are a lot of people that make other sauces that are milder and have lots of other ingredients and spices in it. And it's really unique, because what's really interesting is that, you know, these peppers, this ingredient, it crosses all cultures. So you have, you know, some people that are making Asian-style sauces. You have some that are making Southwestern-style sauces. You have some that are making African-style sauces. And it all comes together to one basic ingredient. So a lot of these guys are making a sauce that either is really hot, or it's focused towards a certain ethnic group or a certain culture to support a local community of people.
So that if you're doing something that's in, say, Southeast Asia, certainly it's going to be hot. I mean, there's no question. But the flavors that go into it are as important as how hot it is then.
There are some. You know, there's a whole segment of this market that is almost like a novelty.
Okay.
You know, like, how hot can you get it?
Right.
You know,
sure.
I want to taste the hottest thing in the world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to throw up after I eat this, you know, give me a video so I can put it on YouTube. There are people that really like hot things.
A couple of weeks ago, there was in New Orleans, there was a hot sauce in Garmatio.
Yes.
Did you see anything there that you didn't know, or something interesting that you could share with us at that particular show?
Yeah, it was a very successful show, and we're very thankful to be involved with it, and it's something we're trying to grow in the region. It's always interesting to see the consumers come, because you can see what their interest is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we go to these different shows in different regions, it's very interesting to see what their preference is. You know, some places like hotter things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we do a show in Albuquerque, people want hot, hot, hot. You know, we do a show here, they want something a little bit more mild, a little more Louisiana-based.
Right,
that's right.
Mm-hmm.
A little more, you know.
Yeah, because I know there were competitions going on.
Absolutely.
And what was there a particular kind that tended to win more of the competitions than others? I mean, the judges, they come from...
The judges come from the industry.
Okay.
Okay. Some of there's some people that have all kinds of blogs on hot sauces.
Right, right.
So there are all kinds of experts that come in as judges from all over the country.
In the last 2 minutes of this segment, I want to just kind of talk quickly about something that there's a lot of, and I'm not going to say controversy, but everybody has an opinion about, and certainly taste is very subjective. Let's talk about this Scoville unit scale that everybody tries to measure the heat of peppers on. Is it arbitrary? Is it, I realize the super tasters are getting there and biting into these peppers and saying, oh my God, this is an 800 on the Scoville. First of all, what is Scoville and how is it used?
It's a measurement of heat. It's done by chemical analysis. It is scientific. Sometimes that translation from a Scoville unit to actual pepper can be a little bit tricky.
Right.
Okay, so.
I would think so.
Yeah,
right.
So you know, when you get a Scoville, sometimes it's really important to understand. You know, someone has to take that has a reference point to build that Scoville unit to give you a good result that is accurate. Okay, so that has to be tested. And there are several ways that it can be tested. It can be tested wet or it can be tested dehydrated. And of course, when it's dehydrated, of course, it comes with a higher Scoville reading. Okay, so there's to answer your question, there's some confusion of what a Scoville unit of a certain pepper is. So if you were to take this habanero, which is really, really hot, okay, if you were to test the Scoville on it, may only come out to 80-90,000 Scoville. If you were to dehydrate it and test it, it may come out to 450,000 Scoville. Okay, so there's different ways to test that, and sometimes there's some confusion on, you know.
Sure. But I guess it still gives us kind of a relative.
Absolutely.
With sweet peppers having none of the chemical in them to make them hot at all.
The capsicum.
Bell pepper doesn't have any of that, and then you start going up the level.
Yeah, so it's all based, and that's what's driving it. Okay, the capsicum.
Right.
And so all these hot peppers have capsicum in it, and they have different levels of capsicum, different concentrations, and that would drive your...
Well, Chris, we have a lot of peppers here, so we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, Chris and I are going to put our heads together because he's got the ultimate test today. He and I are going to sit here and come up with a combination for a sauce for our new restaurant, Revolution, in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. You can do it right here.
The engineer and the cook, we're going to talk about peppers when we get back, y'all. You don't want to miss this.
Red demon food from below. Your mouth, it will be in despair. And your belly will say, que pasó. When a man came around who was withered and brown, I believe that his name was Jose.
Jose!
He was laughing and smiling and telling us jokes. Then quickly his smile went away.
Oh.
He said, listen, my friends, if there's not much to spend and you can't spare a lot of dinero, your meal will be free if you happen to eat this bowl of red habanero. Oh, beware of the great habanero, the red demon food from below. Your mouth, it will be in despair, and your belly will say, que pasó. Oh, beware of the great habanero, the red demon food from below. Your mouth, it will be in despair, and your belly will say, que pasó.
Our music on the Thistle and Shamrock transcends boundaries, expands horizons, celebrates tradition, stimulates innovation. It's music to bring people together, so why don't you join us?
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
Avec Val. Tous les jeudis soirs à 9h sur KRVS, la radio Acadie. Et c'est formidable.
Quelle sensation! Oh! Oh!
Regional Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS-FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
T'as des misères à réveiller les dimanches matins? Mais allume la radio avec moi, Louis Michaud, tous les dimanches matins, 7h jusqu'à 9h. On va charrer en français, écouter la musique en français et boire une petite tasse de café. Join me, Louis Michaud, if you have trouble waking up in the Sunday mornings. Just turn your radio to KRVS from 7 to 9 and hear me with Le Réveil, The Awakening en français.
I got laid off in Lubbock and laid low in LaGrange. Lost a lady in Laredo, but some things they never change. In Maria's Cantina with the Cabrito cuisine, I said, Maria Cerveza, she was the best I had ever seen. Jalapeno Maria, oh, it's so good to see ya. Jalapeno Maria, it's so good to be here. Well, she said, play me conjunto, and she started to sway. Like a rainbow tornado, she carried me away. Oh, my head, it was spinning, her hot breath in my ear. I said, Maria, I love you. She said, have another beer. Jalapeno Maria, oh, it's so good to see ya. Jalapeno Maria, it's so good.
I think if we ever get out of food radio, we can get into music. We have the best tasting show on radio. We have the best music show on radio.
Yeah, we have the best taste in music.
We have the best taste in music, that's right. So, Michelle, you were asking, before we jump into our experiment here, you were asking about...
You have these in retail now, the pepper mash?
Correct.
So, if I go to the store and I buy a jar of this, what am I to do with it?
Like we're discussing, it is a very basic ingredient.
So I could marinate with it, or
absolutely,
I could just add it into beans, or
absolutely, you can marinate with it. You can rub your meats with it. You can put it directly into a gumbo or a stew instead of using maybe a dried pepper. This is going to have a lot more flavor, a better flavor profile, better freshness, mm-hmm, taste than what a dried pepper would be. So it can be used to cook with. It can be used to put on your food to spice things up when you're done. If you have a salsa you like, you can put a spoonful in there and spice it up a little bit. There's all
kind of a secret
things.
Ingredient.
That's right.
Yeah, I think, mm-hmm, the best way to describe it is that in Louisiana, we normally think about reaching over for a bottle of hot sauce, which is fantastic. It's actually, mm-hmm, made so much of the economy of Louisiana. And you just kind of take that hot sauce bottle and you shake the vinegar that has been infused with the pepper mash to create this wonderful acid-based sauce that you put on top of white beans or red beans, or you can flavor meats, mm-hmm, or whatever. The difference here is that you're actually taking the base of that ingredient. You're taking the chopped fresh peppers right out of the field before they at their ripest state, chopping them up, including the seeds, and then mixing it with a percentage of salt and a touch of vinegar and blending it well and putting it right into the jar. So when you take a tablespoon of that and put it into the pot, you're tasting the feel.
Mm-hmm.
You're tasting the richness of the pepper in its best state because now it's preserved at that perfect time. And look at the colors. And
that's beautiful.
And then you can flavor it as well, like this particular one right here, which we'll talk about, has a smoke flavor to it or whatever.
And, and you say the salt and the vinegar for preserving, so the shelf life is pretty stable. Then.
Yes. We keep pepper mash in our warehouse for up to 2, sometimes 3 years. So it's very...
Right.
Very shelf stable because of the salt.
And if you leave it in a dark environment, then the colors will stay nice and rich. I mean, if you look at this green jalapeno right here and you look at how pretty and green it is, as long as it's in dark where that light doesn't get in and start to destroy, mm-hmm, that color, it's going to remain beautiful like this, and the flavors won't change. Anyway, Chris, you ready?
I'm ready.
Well, I'll tell you, this is an important task.
I'm taking notes.
So what I told you was this. Everything in our restaurant will be about the story of the cultures of Louisiana. So the Creoles are the mixture. So the Creoles are beginning with the Native Americans. Then we go to the French who arrived here. Then the Spanish who came next. Then the Germans who arrived. The Africans who came in slavery. The English. The Italians. Those 7 nations kind of came here, intermarried their cuisine, their philosophies, their techniques to create the mixtures. The Creolas, like Crayola brand crayons, the mixture of color in and culture. And what we have here is a mixture of color. Here, even though some of these peppers may be like this one, like the ghost from India or wherever they're from, or the Mexico or wherever, we have that mixture. So I said, I want to get a pepper sauce in Revolution Restaurant that's going to be a story of the evolution of these nations in Louisiana. And in Louisiana, we don't only like heat and spice. We also like flavor. And flavor is brought about with salt and herbs and whatever else goes into it. So that's kind of our task here today. Now, you already have flavors built into some of these by just the peppers you're using. So that's the premise we're going to begin on. Now, where do we start?
Well, we've got lots of different types of peppers here today. So, you know, what we brought was a chipotle, which is a smoked jalapeno, a red habanero, a green jalapeno, a red serrano, a cayenne, and a smoked habanero, and we even brought some scallion mash, and we brought a little bit of our ghost pepper that we keep. So there's a wide variety of different peppers that we have here, and different taste profiles, and different levels of heat, and different colors. Okay, so normally what we, you know, when someone is trying to make a new sauce or a new dish, normally what we try to start with is try to understand what flavor profile you'd like to have as your base. And what level of heat you'd like to have?
First and foremost, Michelle, I'm about flavor, right?
Flavor, and yeah. The balance of heat.
Yeah, and one of the flavor components we have on the table here is these green onions. And look at beautiful puree.
Scallion.
Look at these scallions, how gorgeous they are. I mean, this is green. It's beautiful. So I would begin by putting this in, even though it's not hot. All right, Chris, so now we have a little flavor in the pot right here. Now we have levels of heat in front of us.
That's right.
And so can we segregate maybe those from a different country? I mean, so maybe all of these are from South America, but is there anyone here that's not from, why don't you tell us what should we go with? If we're looking to maybe have one or two countries here, do you have anything?
Most of what we have here on the table today for this particular batch of mash came from the country of Peru, with exception of the chipotle, which actually came from Panama. Although some of these peppers may be more traditional from other regions. So
right, right.
Our red serrano came from Mexico, actually.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to put the serrano right here. I really like this one because, of course, the chipotle has the smoke in it.
Yes.
Anything else? Because the chipotle is the smoked pepper.
It's a smoked jalapeno.
Yes. So we're adding the jalapeno, and it's from Mexico. And it's smoke, so we have to add a little bit of that.
Absolutely.
Right? We have to add a little smoke in that.
It's my favorite. Look,
we got to have a little smoke. We love smoke
and
in Louisiana.
Is that, now, is this your favorite?
That's my favorite.
It's one of my favorites, too. See, Chris and I have things in common already.
Yeah.
Well, and add the fact that, as Chris told us earlier, that it's smoked over sugar cane.
Yes.
Now, I can think of a few things grown in Louisiana. Exactly.
Smoked over sugar cane. That's a story right there.
That's right.
It's a beautiful story. You hit all the nations with that one.
We done just knocked it dead right here.
We're done. I think y'all are done.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and you know, it does create a unique taste profile with that sugarcane smoking.
Right.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of people ask us, wow, this chipotle is different than any other chipotle we've ever had. And
now, where is this smoked at?
It's actually smoked in Panama.
In Panama.
That's
okay,
right.
So now we have our scallion mash, our scallion puree, as well as our chipotle that's smoked with sugarcane. Now we probably have to get some real heat in here. Now, real heat so far, well, we do have the ghost pepper, which is going to be really hot.
Yes.
Now, is this supposedly the hottest? Is it really?
It used to be considered the hottest pepper in the world. Again, it's somewhat dependent on where it's grown and the climate and the soil conditions, but there has been several other peppers that have come since then that are now claimed that title.
Right, right.
You know, you've got the Trinidad Scorpion, several other peppers that they're also very hot. It is very warm.
Okay, Michelle, I'm going to put an eighth of
an
a teaspoon
eighth.
Of
okay.
the ghost pepper.
Yeah, I would definitely
careful.
Keep that.
And I'm going to put it right in the middle right there so we remember it. That's
look
the ghost
pretty.
Pepper from India, isn't that?
That is very
well,
pretty.
This is actually grown in India because we all in food manufacturing, as you are in food manufacturing, we have to be very careful of our raw ingredients, and we have to test them, just as we do in our Louisiana seafoods out
That's
of
right.
the Gulf. It's part of what we do every single day. So we go after areas that would grow this pepper that we know the testing is done and great. So this ghost pepper is coming from where?
Actually, Costa Rica.
Costa Rica.
That's
so
right.
you're growing it there because the climate is perfect for growing it.
Yes.
And you're still getting the same flavor as you would from a place that may not have the testing you require. So that's always something.
Yeah, it's a very unique pepper because it has certain temperature requirements. So we found a place with an altitude that is similar to where they grow
right.
it. In.
Okay, so now we have our ghost pepper, our scallion, and we have our smoked sugarcane chipotle. Okay, now we have some options here. We have the green jalapeno. We have the green habanero. We have our cayenne pepper. We probably should put a little cayenne in there. I mean, because it's so just in.
Do you want? I have a question.
Yeah.
Is less more? I mean, as far as blending of peppers, right now we have scallions, we have smoked chipotle, and we have the ghost pepper. Can you just put as much as you want to, or is less more? But I'm asking for the person at home who's thinking of buying something and they see 14 different jars and saying, oh my goodness, you know, what do I try? Do I have to have them all, or can I just use one? Or
you can just use one, or you can blend them together. And it really depends whether you're trying to have something that's really thick that you're going to use just simply as an ingredient, or if you're trying to create a sauce that you're going to pour onto your food. There's going to be other things added, possibly like vinegar and other things.
Yeah, good color. That's right.
Good commentary.
Okay.
Good color.
Good color.
Right.
Yeah, we need a color person. Okay. Well, we have to add cayenne. Without cayenne, we're not paying homage to our past here.
Mm-hmm.
We have to pay
different kind
homage
of
to our tradition.
That's right.
A little cayenne in there. Okay, I'm going to put a little bit of the cayenne right here. Look, we have a pretty good color thing going on
here. Yeah, we do.
The dark, we have the red ghost sitting right on top.
Mm-hmm.
We have the scallion, and now we have our cayenne in there. Okay, so what country are we missing here right now, Chris? I mean, you're the expert here. What are we missing that we should put in here now? Of course, we don't have any of the habanero in there yet, right?
No habanero in there yet.
The serrano's not in there yet.
Now, serrano's
not
in there.
Has a lot of flavor, right?
That's
now,
right.
Now, flavor between serrano and habanero, which do you like for flavor?
They're both very flavorful, just a little bit different flavor. You know, to me, a serrano takes more like a vegetable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a habanero's got more of a fruity flavor to it.
Yeah.
Depends what you're trying to accomplish. Of course, a habanero is much hotter than that serrano is.
Michelle.
Why do I have this feeling that pretty soon we can have all of them in that little bowl?
Michelle.
Why do I get this feeling?
No. We're gonna use a little bit of that green.
That's some hot stuff.
A little bit like this, right? It'd be enough.
Looks good.
So I'll put that right next to the ghost pepper. So now I can only really add one more. I think we have some pretty good choices in here right now, though.
Agreed.
Right? So what one of thinking of a country that might not be represented here? Are we thinking of the seven nations? But we also have to think flavor. So what are we missing out of these right here? We still hadn't used the red jalapeno. We still hadn't used the...
I don't think we got the serrano in there yet.
No, nope. We didn't get the serrano.
And
okay, now we have the serrano and we have the habanero. Which one should we go with? Your choice. It's your choice based on your knowledge of those.
Yeah, I think let's put a little red serrano in there.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Chris, I think we might be somewhere. And so just a little bit of this, right, of the serrano?
Yeah, I would...
Just a little bit.
That looks perfect.
That looks good. So, Chris, we're just going to mix this up, right?
Mix it up.
I tell you what, and I like the color. You know why?
Why?
Because it'll stand out. It's different on the table for hot sauce. There's not any dark, smoky. And when people say, well, why is this sauce dark like this? I'm going to say,
it's a special
sugar cane smoke, of course. Do you have the picture of this? This is the first time this sauce is being tasted.
With the look on
very,
his face.
Very important.
A very important moment here. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm gonna do it without the chip, if you don't mind.
There you go. See that? He's putting it on the back of his hand. Mm-hmm. That's a picture right there. That's an official taster, right?
Same way you test lipstick.
That'd be some hot lipstick.
No kidding.
All right.
Ready?
You got this? Huh? You got mine right here? Okay,
then
Chris, let's go ahead and get a little bite of this and see what happens.
That's an interesting
thing. I think this is
fantastic.
Just
happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first thing I taste was a scallion.
Absolutely.
Yep. Really?
That's right.
Now, let me tell you what. You saw how much scallion I put in there? Almost half, right?
That's right.
To balance all those other flavors, the scallion was sweet. Just absolutely fantastic. So
I got the scallion first, and then I got a little bit of smoke flavor.
A little bit of smoke. Not a habanero starting to pop in there. The serrano is starting to
pop in.
You're starting to get that heat.
But the flavor, it's not just hot.
So now a challenge to our Facebook listeners that's sitting there ready to go to Facebook, right? Facebook.com/stirrin, S-T-I-R-R-I-N, stirring it up radio. You know how they find us. Our sauce is dark. If you think about it, it's almost chocolate, right? It's a chocolate color. It has, right up front, you have that nice dark, smoky flavor. You have the sweetness of the scallion, which balances it off beautifully. We need a name for it. Got to have Revolution What? Because it's our first one. Revolution is our brand. Huh? So now our listeners on Facebook, think of that dark chocolate rich. Think of scallions being sweet. And think of, so anyway, So what do you think about our experiment here?
I think it's delicious.
So that's our challenge now. So we have our hot sauce, we have our flavors, we have I'm excited.
And we have great mash.
I mean, we have great mash. And Chris, once again, your company's name?
Louisiana Pepper Exchange.
Louisiana Pepper Exchange. Right. And you welcome people to give y'all a call right there in Baton Rouge, right?
Yeah, we're right on the internet. If you want to look us up, you can come by and see us. We'd love to have people come by and visit. We have a pretty strong following on Facebook as well, so we have a lot of people that like to follow that. And, you know, as we get new exciting things that come in, we immediately post it on Facebook, and that's kind of our
You got a new and exciting thing to post right now, developing the hot sauce restaurant revolution.
Right.
And we also have the photography sitting here.
That's right.
So anyway, hey, look, thanks so much for being here with us today. Really fantastic to have you, and great to meet you. Because,
yes.
I mean, and I have to admit, and it's a kind of a mea culpa moment, because I didn't know he was right there in Baton Rouge.
But now we do, and you're going to be having some visitors.
Now we do it. Now he's in trouble. So, Chris, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm very honored to be here. Thank you.
And y'all, thanks so much for being here with us today. And of course, we're not posting our recipe on the.
It's a secret.
It's a secret, other than what you just heard. So anyway, hey, look, y'all, don't worry about going make your own hot sauce just yet. Just wait for hours to hit the store, and you can pick it up there. Thanks so much. Okay, y'all, we'll see you. We'll see you next week, same time,
same station.
Go make some hot sauce, really.
This is Helen Forster, and we're bringing you E-Town from Red Rocks outside of Morrison, Colorado.